The last 5 years, I have seen a considerable amount of change in how companies approach team development. So with all this technology at your fingertips to generate real-time communication and collaboration, tons of transparency and lots of data and insights, there is this intended increase in velocity and hopefully quality of decision or output that the work has changed. The workforce has changed and the workplace has changed.
That's Jennifer Trespass, known as JT, Chief Operations Officer and partner at Wildcat Venture Partners. She's been involved in implementing human resource strategies at several transformative and industry-leading companies, including Yahoo, Salesforce, Electronic Arts, and Living Social. As a result, she inherently understands the impact that the workforce and workplace have on business and the team dynamics within them. These evolving factors are more important than ever in the current situation we find ourselves on both the micro and macro level.
So these shifts have tremendously impacted the way companies think about attracting, retaining, and developing their employees to work collaboratively to drive the results.
So what does it really take to build and sustain effective teams in today's modern work world, which is rapidly transitioning from what we've been familiar with? Welcome to the Strategic Momentum Podcast, the show where we share tips, stories, and advice from progressive leaders on how to break through business and career inertia so you can better understand the business of work. I'm your host, Connie Steele. JT has always had a passion for building teams and growing businesses. With 25 years under her belt as an HR and operations leader, she's established the people and systems infrastructure for incredibly high-growth environments. It's required her to think progressively and holistically given the accelerated pace at which these companies were operating at. And those phases of team development, forming, storming, norming, performing, are ones where JT has been intimately involved in time and time again. Work dynamics have shifted rapidly in recent weeks, with many businesses needing to quickly adapt and adjust to managing teams and their operations remotely. So in this episode, JT shares her perspective and advice on the critical factors leaders and individuals need to consider when establishing and being part of high-performing teams, the challenges that organizations commonly face in doing so, as well as what it takes to sustain those levels of productivity and impact. JT always had an interest in being involved with something quite progressive, and her career started out where she was looking for a balance between data and relationships. After studying accounting and human resources in college, she then pursued her MBA. She always knew she wanted to be a future leader. JT began working in the banking industry within the HR field. Early on, however, her instinct was driving her towards opportunities that had a growth mandate. In fact,
one of the things that early on in my career that I recognized was that I was gravitating towards growth, towards something new, towards the launch of something, to be able to create something and see it come to life. And that is a thread that is throughout my entire journey of figuring out how to apply that passion and desire to see growth and tap into the potential of a product, of a market, of talent in a way that was very fulfilling.
And that pursuit of growth led her to a role where she was employee number 6 at a new division within Putnam Investments, launching a new product, the 401k product. She was responsible for the human resources aspect of this. And within 3 years, the business grew to $1 billion and had over 900 employees. JT continued her career in financial services at Fleet, where she also helped grow out their emerging markets business before heading out to Silicon Valley and transitioning to a business operations leadership role.
I then moved out to Silicon Valley and was put into that whole tech sector. And was recruited by a former colleague of mine who was the CEO of ZDNet Networks. It was a crazy time in early 2000. And I went to Yahoo, and that is where I actually started to shift my focus from human resources to business operations. That included putting together business plans, measurement, goal setting, business development, sales plans and forecasting, operational cadences. And we built out a division called the media division, which grew to about $500 million in revenue with 800 employees, and launched new content and strategies to help Yahoo with their content strategy. I then also went to Electronic Arts in gaming and started a new division with a president. I was employee number 9, and we were going to go after this company that was doing some mobile gaming stuff called Zynga. And we were able to build through a strategy of build, partner, and buy. We built studios, we partnered with Hasbro, and we bought several mobile companies throughout Asia and also in the States, and was a billion-dollar business in 18 months.
And JT's continued upward trajectory didn't stop there. She also went to Salesforce to help them with their growth strategy from both an organic and M&A perspective before being tapped to lead Living Social's HR function and running their internal operations organization.
This was a company that was about 500 employees. We grew to 5,000 in a six-month period of time. We took in over $650 million of venture capital money, and we did 21 acquisitions in 22 countries.
Wow.
In a two-month period. Yeah, crazy stuff. Lots of lessons learned as it relates to growth and also the failures that come with growth.
This exposure to different talent markets, business scenarios, and business models, most of which are converging, have given her a unique perspective on both the people and operations front. And throughout her journey, she's never forgotten the importance of human relationships. After running HR and operations at Rocket Fuel, JT made her last career pivot into venture capital.
So I moved into another company called Rocket Fuel, which was a public company that was an AI machine learning ad technology company. It was an amazing place with superior technology that had an engineering-centric mindset that had the best AI talent, I think, globally. And it built such a superior product. When we went out to market, unfortunately, we got commoditized. So there was a significant amount of business challenges on how to retain your pricing, your margins, your talent strategies. And that was a challenging role in which I learned a significant amount about not only managing the public narrative of the company, but also how you keep the internal strategies and teams engaged and aligned to a pivot that the company had made. Eventually, it did get sold to a company that was owned by private equity. And from there, I actually, again, through the network, met with Bill Erickson, who was the founder of Wildcat Venture Partners and an original investor in Rocket Fuel. And we discussed the opportunity of how do we leverage this operational and talent strategy into the startup world in a unique and different way that's beyond just recruiting talent. And I have been at Wildcat Venture Partners since. Wildcat Venture Partners is a company that invests in early enterprise digital transformation technology companies. And we have a focus on digital health, fintech, edtech, and just general enterprise SaaS that will disrupt antiquated processes and unlock trapped value that's either through data or through systems.
For JT, it's always been in her DNA to think holistically about how the people and business needs have to be aligned, integrated, and balanced, regardless of whether the business is a startup or large enterprise. With the breadth and depth of roles she's had, she's also inherently understood how to help people operate effectively in matrixed and collaborative environments. So how have these experiences shaped the way she approaches what she does today?
You know, these experiences have been many failures in each one of them. And failure is not a bad thing. It is actually something that you need to embrace. If you're pushing yourself hard enough, you are going to have failures and you need to be comfortable with it. And at first, that was not a comfort level I had. It was something that over time, building up my experiences, the confidence, the support system that I had, the openness to learn, and the desire to continuously grow, allowed for that balance and that learning so that you can take it, share it with vulnerability to your colleagues or your team or to a client, and give them a support system to help them be successful or to understand a certain position. So as you're advising startups, I think that whole entire journey that I've had well positions me to be able to identify things quickly and sniff those things out quickly, but humanize and contextualize in a way that resonates for them.
So everything sounds like it's about being able to adapt, iterate quickly, and resilience is definitely a key theme as well.
It sure is. And that actually is our important attributes to a team. And the team dynamics that and attributes that you need to see in individuals in order to have a high-performing team as well.
So for someone who has been intimately involved in building and scaling teams, you've certainly seen how important team dynamics are to the success of a business. So working collaboratively versus individually now, we also know is the norm in order to be really more competitive, creative, and get to market faster. So with the workforce and workplace being fundamentally different today than, say, 5 to 10 years ago, it seems that there's even more to consider when establishing and sustaining high-performing teams. So with that all said, what do you think are the most important factors in building the right team today?
The last 5 years, I have seen a considerable amount of change in how companies approach team development. So with all this technology at your fingertips to generate real-time communication and collaboration, tons of transparency, and lots of data and insights, there is this intended increase in velocity and hopefully quality of decision or output, that the work has changed. The workforce has changed in that whether it's generational representation or that you have global access to talent that you didn't before, or just even the gig economy, that workforce has changed and the workplace has changed. And that's been from you must be present at corporate HQ to a WeWorks, a work from home arrangement, or like what HQ?
Right.
So these shifts have tremendously impacted the way companies think about attracting, retaining, and developing their employees to work collaboratively to drive the results. And I think, as you asked it about the important factors in building the right team, before I go into some of those specific factors, there is this overarching influence that will determine some of the team dynamics, and that is the culture and the leadership of the company. So, for example, I was at a company where we would set up multiple teams that had the same objective and made the best team win. And that created intense competitive spirit within the company that resulted in strong product releases. But it also created politics. And that's okay. That was part of the culture and leadership. At another company we had values that were about being bold and demonstrating your determination and hunger and make sure you delight in your design and your interaction with your customers and be respectful towards each other. And this also resulted in amazing product releases and a team of unity that was somewhat infectious to a point of being a little too clicky. And that too was part of the culture and leadership. So at the heart of it, for leaders who are listening to this, this is about understanding the cultural elements and the leadership values and then your own leadership style to create that compelling experience that will generate business results while you're tapping into the potential of each individual on that team so that they can achieve some meaningful purpose. And I know that has a lot of loaded stuff in there, but really important that it's a balance between the business results and the individual's potential and feeling connected to the purpose that creates a high performing team. That's really important, especially with tech, generational differences, and distributed teams being a big part of the equation.
What I learned from that and what I have kind of threaded through, I should say, is that once you decide, say, what those cultural elements are, those leadership values, as you mentioned, it's probably important too to play that out, to make sure that if you're saying that we stand for X and those values are Y, this could be the potential outcome. And is that the right outcome that you want to create the team dynamics that will essentially catapult you to the place that you want to be?
Correct. Correct.
Like our guest, Rick Lindquist, in episode 66, learning from failure is something JT embraces. And this mindset and approach, when applied to team dynamics, helps everyone learn how to build that resilience based on continually adapting and iterating. And while there have been a lot of changes in the workforce and workplace, JT reminds us that to build an effective team, it still, number one, involves creating a compelling environment that takes into account the desired business results, and number two, the potential of all the individuals involved. It's finding that balance, and that balance is reflected across several facets on an employee level as well.
I think there is a balance between the core technical skills, and I don't mean coding. So this can be your functional expertise, whether it's your accounting or if you're brand marketing, HR, or engineering, that you have those technical skills and experience that you're bringing to the table. So that's one piece of the element. And then the other are the soft skills, such as communication, organizational, relationship management type of skills that I think right now, with all the tech out there, I believe that many think that the technology is replacing this soft skill. Tech connects with communication. It organizes your project plans. It creates collaboration. And yes, it does. But there is one thing that I would say: there is no replacement for that one-on-one exchange that you need to have at some point in time in building that trust and that relationship. So it's a combination of tech and soft skills, your technical skills and your soft skills. And those soft skills are to me, there's some key ones that are really important. Outside of being digital savvy, no question, that is table stakes to get into the flow of the team, to get access to content, to get access to the way most companies are operating, you have to be digital savvy. But you also need to have your own self-management skills. You need to have relationship building skills, understand how to build trust, be able to communicate clearly, be able to contribute to decisions and how they get made, or that you're clear on how you're making decisions. How to hold yourself and others accountable in dealing with conflict. So that those self-management skills are really important. I would say that adhering to plans, creating and adhering to plans are very important as well. There's clear roles. There's clear goals. Yes, you can have a project plan software that puts all that stuff in there, but you also need to know how to adhere to those and manage through those. Measuring success is really important as well. You do need to get to the business results, and measurement is a key component. But also, when you hit those milestones, it's just giving yourself a time to celebrate for hitting that and to reflect on it. And a lot of times we are just moving so fast and checking the boxes that we don't necessarily enjoy the connection to the milestones to see the progress. Another thing that I've noticed is that there needs to be some improvement in this attribute, in my opinion, is around role fluidity. And what I hear a lot is that's not part of my job description. And you need to be adaptable, agile, resilient, and really fluid with the role. Ultimately, as a team, you do need to play your position. So you do need to know your position and play it. But being fluid with how you go about doing it, how the team is going to play with each other, what advice you're getting from the coaches, how you're getting cheered on by your fans. Those are all things that are very dynamic and that you need to have some fluidity around. Some other things I would say is just your energy, your commitment. There are people on the team that I have seen who aren't committed. And when you have that, they become an anchor to the rest of the team of not being able to set sail to figure out their journey to succeed. So commitment's really important, and testing that frequently, having respectful treatment for each other, even a camaraderie and a closeness, the ability to virtually high five each other and feel that emotional connection. Diversity of thought and representation, and then overall just like a winning attitude. So I know, again, there's a lot there, but there is a lot of soft skills associated with being a good team member. It's just not being good technically at your job. It's about the balance between the two.
So to establish that high-functioning team, the technology used and individual technical skills aren't sufficient. Human relations are still vital. You can't forget that there's a person on the other side of the screen, and a relationship of trust still needs to be built. Those soft skills matter, particularly in today's virtual and globally distributed environment. Also, everyone on the team needs to be accountable, be clear on their goals, and how they are going to achieve them. At the pace at which change is happening today, it's important to be fluid in your role and still maintain that sense of connection to the team. And as GT will share, these self-management skills are foundational.
So talking about those soft skills and specifically self-management skills, for example, that you referenced, do you feel like that is to some degree the core challenge or the primary challenge that inhibits the ability to effectively build the right dynamics in a team? No matter whether you are co-located or whether you are virtually distributed.
These factors, and self-management specifically, should not differ based on various aspects of a company, whether it's your size or your location. The weighting or emphasis may be different. If you're distributed, you may have to have more emphasis and reliance on tech to deal with a lot of updating and content creation and things of that nature, or how to deal with video conferencing or whatever those things might be. So there is some emphasis that might be heavier than others, but the self-management piece is the core to having high-performing teams. And it's a journey. So we all, I think, have heard of the forming, storming, norming, performing reference from our past. And that is where teams need to learn to go through that type of cycle together and create not only their clear purpose, but also how they're going to operate, how they're going to hold each other accountable, how they're going to deal with conflict. And most teams dive into the what, let's get this done, and don't take the time to say, how are we going to do this? The how. They may talk about the how as it relates to tech. Oh, we'll use this software, we'll use this application, but they don't talk about the how for each other. And that's where the team development emphasis should be.
Would you say it's fair that a common misconception is that it's all about the geographic, somewhat demographic and systems profile of the company that people tend to focus on first, which is the what in how to compose that right formation of the team versus that really foundational level, which is the people at the end of the day. And that is what ties to, you know, that human element, the need to focus on the soft skills and create that appropriate connection so that you can figure out what the right how is.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is both, right? And the how, though, is where we tend to gloss over and not spend a lot of time on it. And so I think it's more balance of, yes, it's the what and the how, but how you go about doing it, spend some more time making sure you guys are talking through it, not glossing over it, and revisiting it. Because as you evolve as a team, as new team members come in or off, as the dynamics of the scope change, which they will, and how you handle that, and potentially what new team members you may need that because the scope has changed, because you don't have that skill set or that expertise or that strength. So it's a highly dynamic process that I think teams tend to neglect or don't go as deep as they should.
Let's talk a little more about the how. Can you give us some examples of what an organization or company may need to think about in their how? Like, how would they go about planning for that, say, in a company that's small versus a mid-sized company versus an enterprise company?
Yeah, sure. So today, as I mentioned, I mostly work with early stage startups. So these are going to be smaller teams. Some of the how is more about the person you bring on board, right? And there's a right or wrong individual that you bring on board is significantly magnified. Their impact is felt extremely quickly because you are on such a small team. So they might be a technical superstar, but they don't have necessarily all the right skills that align to contributing to the culture or to the velocity of the thought process or to the values of the team or the company. And so my advice on something like that, where on small teams, when you bring a team member in and their magnification is felt very quickly, or their impact is felt very, very quickly, is go slow, meaning hire slow, or make that decision, be more thoughtful around that decision, because the impact is felt a lot quicker. And if there is an impact that is negative, then fire fast. So, and that's actually in our book that Wildcat Venture Partners put out there around a model called the traction gap, which is about how do you accelerate your performance to get to scale. And a big component of that is teams. And identifying the talent that you need on your team, go slow with hiring them to get it right for the time where you're at. But if they don't hit it and you're sensing it, make a move fast. Don't try and say, oh, it can work itself out. Now, that's not the same advice I would necessarily give to other companies. But when it comes to startups, that absolutely is a key tenet, at least for Wildcat and our Traction Gap framework and for startups around team.
To create the right team dynamics, no matter where a team may be located, it's necessary to determine the way it will operate and deal with conflict from a people and process perspective, and not the technology or application point of view. It's focusing on the how. And not only the what, because change will be constant in terms of team members and subsequently work scope. And that how, particularly with early stage companies, is directly tied to having the right people. And when these folks aren't the right fit anymore, why are leaders still feeling inhibited to let go of these individuals when they know it's the right thing to do?
You know, it's hard, right? Because You're telling somebody, one, that it's not working for them, but it's also not working for you, and you have some responsibility around it as well. It's just a hard human behavior and exchange that isn't easy. But founders need to own that. And CEOs and leaders, they need to own that. And they have to feel comfortable with it. And it's not personal. And it's all on how you process that decision and deliver that message in a supportive, in a non-personal way that can be more effective for the leader delivering it and also for the person receiving that message. But yeah, it's a tough one. It's easier said than done. And we've all are guilty of probably having that experience, regardless of whether you're in a startup or not. But in nowadays, the velocity of team performance is at such a pace that you don't have the luxury of having dead weight or an anchor or a misaligned misfit or somebody who is infecting the team with negativity. It's just like, move on. We don't have time for that. And that is hard because you do want to see, hey, there's some conflict here. Can we get you back on board? Can you get back aligned? And we need to see some movement here in that direction, or else we got to part ways on team or company. And there are going to be those times, but startups, founders, you got to sniff it out. You have to trust your gut because this is your company. This is your culture. This is the way, this is your leadership values. You know them inside and out. And, you got to make those strong moves.
And I think what's really important is to be quite factual in those support points as to why that individual may not be performing, to back up that argument that this isn't the right fit. It's not emotional, it is factual. And because of that, then it comes down to ensuring that the business is on track. So let's go back also and talk about those other scenarios where, you know, in mid-sized companies, which you've worked in, and also these large enterprise companies, which you've also worked in. What recommendations would you have on how, in terms of how would they, in this day and age, build the right teams?
Like I said, it is a balance between technical skills and the soft skills. And making sure you do that inventory of what do I need in order to achieve this business result. So doing that inventory of the expertise, functional area, representation, to make sure that you have that expertise on the books. And then it's also that inventory of the talent relative to their soft skills, but also their potential, their hunger, their passion. So being able to, when you're thinking about putting a team together or that you're hiring to build out your team, of what do I need in order to achieve this business result? What are the values that I want to instill that are important to have as part of this team dynamic? And then assess and evaluate people against those. The other thing that I think is important on the how is that, especially with like Gen X and the millennial generation, I've seen a lot of teams that can be consumed with just looking down and in around tech, process, and the data, lots of data. And so as a leader, it's also making sure that you are helping the team and that the team has the ability to look up and out around the relationship management, self-management type of skills that need to continuously be surfaced when working with a team. So, when it comes to mid-size or large companies, there are a variety of support systems that are from HR team members and business partners and learning and development and external programs that can help with team selection and team development and effectiveness. And those are, they all have different models, but at the end of the day, they essentially say the same thing. There's technical expertise, there's soft skills, and then it's enabled by technology that it's the weighting of what's valuable and what is needed that's going to vary depending on company culture and outcomes.
I hear it's making sure you take this multidimensional view, almost thinking of it as your own product, right? People as this compelling product, which they will change. And there are lots of different factors that you have to consider, you know, so there are all these requirements that you need to take into account and make sure you understand how they are integrated and how they have that impact to determine sort of that right fit for anybody new that you have, that you bring on board.
That's right. And I think that, you know, nowadays, there is a multi-generational composition. When you're thinking about teams on their technical and soft skills, there's also this generational element that influences potentially the dynamics of that team, which I love having that level of diversity because it creates a lot of learning both for all people involved. And what I mean by that is, like, right now I have a team that has a Gen Z, two millennials, an X, and a boomer. And, you know, what we want to achieve is there's alignment around that, but how we go about it is extremely diverse. The boomer wants to have meetings and physical presence, and while the Z wants to engage through the mobile app and do all the updates through the mobile phone while he's out networking with his peers. And so harnessing this diversity, not only of, you know, thinking, but also of how that we operate, the energy and the expertise is that I expect that there is an openness and a respect towards all of the generational contributions on how they work together and helping us to work more effectively. So that the Z knows that, you know what, sometimes face-to-face is really important. And that the boomer knows, hey, I got to get a little bit more online here to connect and be able to adapt not only to the content, but also to connect with this individual who's really important part of the team. So that openness and respect is something that is part of those soft skills that I believe needs to be demonstrated for all team members. So that we can learn about each other and respect the process and adapt to it and not be just stuck in our ways.
And that also starts with having a fundamental awareness of that too, that there are these differences of, you know, whether it is generational, technology, hard skills, soft skills that you mentioned, desire to work in different locations, or it just happens to be that you work in different locations, that there are these multi-dimensional elements to anyone's business that you have to be fully aware of and then understand what's that right balance, as you had mentioned. But it also highlights where all those things can be a huge factor in having potentially a challenging impact on sustaining the right kind of, you know, team dynamics.
Building the right team in a mid-size or large-size enterprise company also involves factoring in all the requirements you're looking for, which involves balancing those technical and soft skills. And it's important not to forget their potential and passion. But as JT pointed out, it also means accounting for generational factors that can influence the group dynamic. So on the flip side, what do leaders need to consider to sustain that high-performing team? And what should they prioritize?
You know, that's a really good question, because again, each model has its own challenges. The thing I would say at the end of the day is that we live in a world today where IQ, being smart, being fast, being tech savvy is something that is essential. And what we can lose sight of is the EQ and the nuances and the deliberateness of relationships and the impact that words have or that behaviors have on people and understanding where they're coming from. And so, you know, I think that the EQ piece is something that can get diluted because we're moving so fast. And but I think it is the thing that should never be replaced, and one that all diversity dynamics, cultural, you just can't replace that one-on-one conversation that is not just about what have you done for me lately, but more about how are you? How are you doing? How can I help? How is it going? And that is what I think helps leaders continue to have pulse and sentiment of the team and the people in order to harness and orchestrate their effectiveness to get to the end goal.
Knowing that that trait is not necessarily taught, sometimes it's caught, and it might not be innate in people, how would you best equip your team, no matter what size, to learn some of those skills?
Well, see, humans are really messy, right? You know, we're not linear. We're completely unpredictable. And, you know, each individual has a unique formula that trigger them to lean in and contribute and be their best and push themselves and feel valued. So, you know, I think sometimes it's about asking the person to help you understand who they are. Now, note that you're not always going to get a clear answer because some will be very suspicious as to why you're asking and maybe don't want to share. But I think that observing, going slow, listening, respecting, being open-minded, those are things that are necessary to embrace EQ. And EQ is not, to your point, it's not natural for everybody. And in some cases, it can take a lot of energy to just get through an exchange with somebody. But it is part of leadership, and it's part of designing teams, and it's part of being a founder. And it's there was an analogy that my executive coach had given me. He said, "Jennifer, you know, you have this rubber band that's just sitting on your hand here, and now put it on your fingers and stretch it out, right? And the rubber band can only get stretched so far before it breaks. And when you put that rubber band on your fingers there and you're stretching it out, you know that the rubber band is just where you are when it's sitting on your hand. It's just you. But then when you have to activate leadership or decision-making or in team development, is that you're going to start stretching that rubber band. And it's going to start stretching you around things. And so it's just figuring out how to stretch yourself and where your breaking points are and becoming self-aware of that. And then figuring out, okay, I'm going to be breaking at some point. I need somebody else to help me. So I'm not sure if that answers the question, but I do know that it's something that every leader needs to strive to understand as part of being a successful leader. It's just not going to be on your results. It's going to be on how you build teams, treat teams, build your culture, value the people, value the diversity, that will ultimately be how your company succeeds. And that will be a demonstration of your EQ and obviously your IQ.
EQ is just as important as IQ. And unfortunately, given how fast everything is moving, there isn't enough time spent assessing how people are really doing. Rather, the tendency has been towards being transactional. However, reading those signals with those who work with you and reacting appropriately is necessary to get to your end goal. So having acquired all this knowledge and experience, how has JT's definition of success since the early days of her career evolved?
I mean, I never thought that I would be doing what I'm doing. I have relied on emotion and relationships to guide the decisions that I've made. And I have no regrets around that. I do think that as you learn, you can become a little bit more balanced to make sure that as you're checking your emotions and your relationships to make sure that those are healthy and valuable for you. I would say that career success for me, I know a lot of people will focus on money. And there are extrinsic things that are important so that you feel valued. But for me, it's mostly intrinsic. And that is seeing individuals that I am engaged with and partner with and am a colleague to see them reach their potential, to see them succeed, and that I know that I'm a part of helping them with that success and being part of their journey. I like connecting dots and find that if I can make a connection that is results in something beneficial for both, that I'm extremely fulfilled. So career success is really on how you define it. And I have been, in my mind, very successful in being a connector and being able to see the potential and bring out the potential of others so that they can succeed. And that's been extremely rewarding. And it can happen through venture, it can happen through human resources, and it can happen through business operations. And I was lucky enough to be able to have all those aspects tie together to be credible and valuable to our current portfolio.
What's some of the best work advice you've ever gotten and why?
Well, I have an actual paperweight that's sitting in front of me as we're talking. And it says, go slow to go fast or you go alone. And early on in my career, it was all about contributing, proving my performance was what mattered. And so it was going fast and just delivering. And it did get me to get the promotions and to progress in my career. But there's a shift that does happen, and it doesn't become about what you do as much as it becomes about what kind of leader you are and how are you as a colleague and are you a team player? And are you someone that people enjoy working with and following? So the shift in bringing people along and going slower to then get everybody aligned to then go faster and deliver was a big shift for me. And there are times it's still something that I have to remind myself regularly, because even with 25 years of experience, you always make these U-turns because you are who you are. And you go too fast and you go alone sometimes. And just catch it a little bit quicker. Oh, you know what? No one else is behind me now. I think I better go back and get them. And be humble about it and own it. And that was also, you know, some of the learnings as part of this mantra of go slow to go fast or you go alone. So yeah, great advice that has stayed with me for the last 15 years.
And to close, any other advice that you would tell your younger self?
My younger self, I would say, don't be so serious and enjoy it some more. There's plenty of time, but enjoy it. Just slow it down a little to enjoy the people around you as well, because there are amazing people that are going to be part of your community that can bring up and raise your gaze and your knowledge in a way that maybe you just didn't recognize because you were going too fast.
And finally, what's the best way listeners can connect with you?
Well, they can connect with me through LinkedIn, as well as for any of those founders that are starting up a business that is in digital health, ed tech, fintech, or just enterprise SaaS. They can absolutely send their ideas to Wildcat Venture Partners. And our website is wildcat.vc.
Thanks so much for sharing your valuable perspective on what it takes to build and sustain teams. And really, it's all about taking that very holistic view on not just the work environment, but people IQ, EQ, and tech to find that correct balance.
That's right. And hopefully everybody can figure out that winning formula. It's a one size fits one formula, but it's one that is very rewarding when you can find it.
We all know how important team dynamics are to the success of a business. And with multiple generations in the workforce, technology accelerating the pace of everything we do, and shifts in how and where employees work, the way organizations operate have inevitably changed. So for me, it was important to learn from JT the important factors we all need to consider to establish that necessary team foundation. And it all comes down to this notion of balancing the what and how, up, down, and across the business. The way you're looking to connect the people, processes, and systems that makes up a team's performance is foundational to accomplishing your goals. And while a company's culture and leadership style influences those team dynamics at an overarching level, you of course can't forget about what's needed at an individual level. There has to be a blend of those technical skills and soft skills. And those soft skills matter even more in today's virtual and globally distributed environment. So remember to build up your EQ and not focus only on the IQ. Because working collaboratively versus individually is now the norm in order to really be more competitive, creative, and get to market faster. And just as a great team isn't made up of one type of employee, the process of building and sustaining them needs to take into account every dimension to drive growth. Thanks for listening to the Strategic Momentum Podcast. You can connect with JT on LinkedIn or visit wildcat.bc. If you've liked what you heard, please share this podcast with friends and colleagues. To get show notes, links, and more tips and advice from this episode, you can visit us at strategicmomentum.co. There, you can contribute your own tips and help add to the great work and career advice we've collected over the years. If you want to learn more about the concept of fail fast, learn fast, check out episode 66 with Rick Lindquist. If you're a startup and want to understand how to best build up your teams while also reducing team dynamic risk, check out Wildcat Venture Partners' book, Traversing the Traction Gap. Don't forget to follow Strategic Momentum on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, and Instagram. You can also join the Facebook community by searching Strategic Momentum in groups. I'm Connie Steele, and you've been listening to the Strategic Momentum Podcast.